Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, here we go.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Three, two, one, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
Just a few days left until Halloween is here. And I would encourage you, my friends, if you're into a good haunt, a good spooky story, to pick up my audiobook called Ghost Stories, Original Tales and Ghostly Urban Legends. 14 separate freestanding stories featuring myself as narrator, some other voice actors, music, sound effects. We just pull out all the stops. About 4 hours of content. You can get it at audible.com. If you don't want to get an Audible membership, you can just get it with your Amazon account or pick it up on iTunes. Just search for Ghost Stories by Seth Andrews. Crank it up, turn off the lights, listen with someone you love, and I hope you enjoy. And thank you so much for the support. This is the audio of a live stream on YouTube where I sort of sound off on a few subjects that have been on my mind. And then respond to chat room comments and questions. If you'd like to watch, the video link is in the description box of this show. Enjoy. I'm leaving in a few days. It's London, Paris. How do I say it? It's not, is it Bruges? Even the phonetics are difficult. Is it Bruges? And then Amsterdam. We're going to go make some memories, and I'm finishing with the Dutch Skeptics Congress. I had read an article a long time ago that said that people who spend their time and resources in experiences are often happier people than those who spend their time on stuff, their resources and money on stuff, all their savings on stuff. They buy trinkets. And you've probably known somebody in your life. Maybe you've been that person where you just surround yourself with a bunch of stuff. And those people, as I have come to believe, I think, they're less satisfied in their own life than those people who create experiences. And it doesn't mean you have to travel all the way around the world. It doesn't mean you have to do these grandiose things, but moments comprise our lives. And the more good moments that you have, the more memorable experiences that you have in your life, I would think you would be a happier person. And then when you recall those specific days with those specific people and you tell those stories when you're among friends and you just, you know, you have that to draw from. It it enhances your life in many ways. And so, at least in my own life, I've come to embrace the idea that experiences more than stuff. And I've got my share of stuff. I mean, I got toys. I mean, I see the keyboard behind me, you know, I try to use it to make music from time to time. And I like audio video gear and those types of things. But, I also want to be about living life. You hear about people who spend all of their lives, decades of their lives, accumulating, and they throw everything into a bank account, you know, sewing the money up in the mattress, so to speak, so that they can retire and then go and see the world. So they spend the first 30 some years of their life working their asses off so that one day they can enjoy themselves. And they retire at 65 with a bunch of money in the bank, and they die at 67. You know, they die at 68. How much life have they missed out on? I'm not saying that we throw caution to the wind, but I've really in my life thought, you know, in moderation, don't decide we'll do it tomorrow all the time. You've got to occasionally say, let's do it right now. Let's create those moments right now. Let's seize the day. And I think those people are largely happier people. Some of that may be a depression era mentality, those of our grandparents who, you know, they were socking every penny away because they never knew if there would be enough. But it's tragic to see someone spend their whole life looking for the next chapter. And then when they get there, they rarely get a chance to experience it. Or another tragedy happens, or they're financially destitute because they have a health diagnosis or whatever. You know, I would encourage you, find an experience, make a memory, connect with a person, a place, a desire, a goal, a dream, do that thing. And we're going to take photographs. I'll share some of them online, and I'm totally excited. Seth, the redneck Oklahoman, is going to Europe, and it's going to be a grand old time. I just finished narrating an audiobook for the 2015 hardcover by Dr. Hector Garcia called Alpha God. And it talks about the primates, evolved primate origins of religious violence, or how evolution helps to explain religious violence, which is very often, but not always, rooted in the male. And so, and don't go off on me yet, all right? This is not a man-hating book. It's not men are responsible for all the world's problems kind of book. It's talking about where does religious violence and oppression come from? And I know that many are going to crucify me, but as I was reading the book and reading about these sort of alpha male displays of dominance and superiority, the quest for power, the allocation or attempt to achieve and harbor and sequester resources, mate competition, the conquering of women, multiple women, and these grand shows of dominance to frighten off potential competitors and also to impress females. And so, you know, he's getting into many of the different primate species out there and what their rituals are and what the alpha males do and what the subordinate males do. And it's an interesting book. The audiobook comes out next month. Okay, it's not even out yet. I just finished the narration. But when you get that deep into a project, you know, I'm reading 90,000 words of it. It really struck me. It's an interesting angle that I haven't heard enough of, I don't think. And as I was reading this this audiobook, I was thinking the whole time about Donald Trump. And I know that those who are pro-Trump are probably already checking out, all right? But I was thinking this guy is almost a caricature of the alpha male power displays. And I heard it, I'm reading or listening to on Audible, I'm listening to Bob Woodward's book called Fear. It's about the Trump candidacy and the first 18 months of the Trump presidency, rather. And of course, Bob Woodward is a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist. He and Carl Bernstein were part of the team that exposed Nixon and Watergate and that corruption, which led to Nixon's resignation. He's the only, as I understand it, the only United States president ever to have resigned. And so it's an interesting sort of exploration. And Woodward is not a hack. He's not, you know, out penning yellow journalism. He doesn't work for the Inquirer. You know, I mean, he's legitimate. I think he's written books on 8 different presidents, and he's been around for freaking half a century doing what he does. He's hugely wired in. And so as I'm into that book, I'm listening to Fear by Bob Woodward as I'm reading Alpha Male by Hector Garcia. I begin to hear one narrative is sort of informing the other. And I thought, I don't think it's a coincidence. I don't think it's just serendipitous that I'm putting these together. I think they relate. Woodward's book talks a lot about Trump's language when it comes to strength and weakness. And this all relates to religion. So bear with me, okay? When you hear Trump talk, he'll talk about, well, this is weak. That's weak. You're weak. You're weak. You're weak. You're weak. I want to be strong. I want to exude strength, 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 strength and weakness. It is really almost, if not exactly, a kind of social Darwinism, where I think Trump believes that there are people who are born into a kind of natural hierarchy. There are the strong and there are the weak, and the strong should dominate the weak. If you're weak, then you deserve to be conquered by the strong. To the strong, to the successful, to the victor go the spoils. I really do believe this is how he sees the world. And so when he sees someone who he considers to be weak, he doesn't see someone who might have been given a life disadvantage. He doesn't understand how societal structure may have caused someone to live a disadvantaged life or limit opportunities. He doesn't empathize. In fact, Woodward says that he completely lacks the ability to have pity or empathy for other people. That was his impression after interviewing hundreds of people in Trump's inner circle. And I totally believe it. I think he's a sociopath. I think he lacks the ability to empathize and show pity. Now, how do you lead people if you cannot empathize with them? For him, it's about alpha. It's about being the powerful. It's about dominating the weak. And if you look at Trump's life as an alpha male, you see sort of this basic primate behavior, right? He's puffing out all the time. He's displaying outwardly all the time, like a peacock, you know, like the big gorilla thumping his chest, right? Making a big noise and making everything pretty much about him. He is very much a womanizer, and he is, quick to boast about his sexual conquests and his ability to have any woman that he wants. This is something that an alpha male in a tribe of primates would do. You see the acquisition of land and territory, alpha male behavior. You see the acquisition of resources. And you also see him not only attracting women who are looking for a strong male who might provide. And this is an oversimplification, but just go with me on this. Read the whole book if you want to really get into the nuance of it. But if you see not only him bringing the women in, but then sort of stamping a brand of ownership upon those women and cloistering them off from other males and other males' influence. And so then those women exist pretty much to serve his ends. I remember there was an older interview when, was he married to Melania? I don't think it was Melania at the time. I think it was who was the one he was married to before? And he said on television that if he comes home and she doesn't have dinner ready for him on the table, he hits the roof. He had another interview where he said, she does exactly what I tell her to do. All right. This is someone that is, in his mind, weak, and he is therefore the strong one. She is to be conquered and dominated. And you see this in religions. If you look at, and I'm going to talk to Dr. Hector Garcia probably in the month of December, to get into this in more detail. I mean, I don't want to be redundant, but I think it's relevant. Think about the way the alpha male in religious structures exists, whether it's the Christian God, right? He is weak, we are weak, he is strong, right? I must decrease, he must increase. Think about the ways we approach the alpha God. We drop to our knees for prayer, for submission. We bow our heads. We close our eyes. We defer physically, verbally, emotionally, mentally. We defer as the submissive, the bride of Christ, to the Alpha, to the God that is wiser and smarter and stronger and can conquer anyone, anywhere. And then you get into a my God can beat up your God kind of thing, right? Where in the Old Testament, where it, thou shalt have no other gods before me, that's an admission that at the time of the Old Testament, there were other gods out there in the zeitgeist, you know, out there in the culture. And so, you know, Yahweh had to be the man, you know, the Alpha God, as opposed to all the other gods who would bow down to the main Alpha God. And it's, you know, it's an interesting thing to get into. And of course, Hector Garcia gets into, the primate tendencies toward violence. And again, once I say that, people are going to immediately run with that nugget and lose their minds and go off the rails. And that's not my point. But if we look at the history of religious violence, Garcia is correct when he says that most of it has been male driven or male dominated. And you'll see whether it's a deity or whether it's the deity's minions, male minions, who are conquering, who are oppressing, who are using women as property and cloistering them off from other men or males or other gods. If you see the acquisition of territory, the dominance of other people, even other nations, if you see religious violence, almost always this is a male-driven thing. Historically, it has been. It's an interesting discussion, and it's been on my mind lately. It's been something I've been really thinking about. And the problem with living in the binary Twitterverse is that someone hears that and they immediately says, Seth Andrews said that men are the cause of all the problems in the world. And I'm like, this is why it's so difficult to have any kind of a nuanced discussion on a very complicated topic, because people don't address topics like that. They're not interested in intellectual honesty, slowing down, absorbing, sponging things up, asking questions. Instead, they'll just grab the first thing that triggers them and they run off and freak out about it on social media. I'm not saying that men are the cause of all the world's problems. All right. That's not remotely what I'm saying. But there are tendencies that you can see for types of behavior that lean more male. And I think we must honestly call those out. So the next time you see Donald Trump and you see what he is doing, as I see him as one of the reasons that evangelical Christianity responds to him, despite the fact that he is the antithesis of almost all the best teachings of Jesus. Like if you were to go through the New Testament and you were to remove, you know, the bad stuff, you know, because Jesus did say some pretty awful stuff, and you were to only have the most laudable, the most noble teachings of Jesus, Donald Trump is the antithesis of that. You would think that evangelicals would reject the guy. They'd certainly reject those attributes if the guy came over to date their daughter. You know what I'm saying? Hey, look, I'm bringing him over, and he's a total horse's ass, and he believes you should get vengeance on the people who wrong you, and he thinks that the strong should dominate the weak. And he's a womanizer and a predator. And, you know, he lies and he cheats and he cheats people in business deals and blah, blah, blah. If he does all these things, they'd say, you know, he can't even come in here. We don't want you to even touch this guy. But as president, you see 90%+ of American evangelical, white evangelical Christians supporting him. Why? I genuinely think it is an appeal to that kind of authoritarian alpha male where they see him as strong. We need somebody strong. Somebody who will dominate and somebody who will protect our particular tribe. And since he's pandering to evangelicals, white evangelicals, they see that as a net plus, a net positive. I mean, how else can they justify it? It's a power grab. He's going to go in as the strong guy. He is our strong guy who will then crush everybody else. He's going to take everybody else and kind of push them off the table so that we can have the majority, if not all of the spoils. I really do think this is what's motivating evangelical Christians in the year 2018. You know, And for them, it doesn't make any difference if he truly means it or not. In Woodward's book, he talks about how Trump used to be pro-choice. And before he announced his candidacy, his advisors went in and said, well, if you're going to run on the Republican ticket, you're going to have to be anti-abortion. And so Trump's like, okay, just like that. He just says, okay, fine. I'm anti-abortion. I mean, this is not conviction. This is a guy who he'll be whatever he decides he has to be in the moment to be able to retain power, to get more of the spotlight upon himself. And the American evangelicals have no problem with this. They don't have any problem because for them, it's not about whether or not he really means it, as long as at the end, he's anti-abortion, which we are because we believe that a soul is created at the moment of conception. And they excuse all this other stuff. Would you let your daughter go out? Would you allow her to be in a beauty pageant contestant dressing room with Donald Trump in the building? Probably not. He's kind of nasty. But you know, a lot of flawed people have been really, really, really good leaders. Or I hear that Jesus sometimes uses very flawed, even corrupt men for his ends. This is an ever-moving goalpost. So now it doesn't even have to be a godly person. Now it can be the most awful person, and they still supposedly get to claim the moral high ground. I really think it's about power. Their religion is the alpha, causing the other religions in the United States to submit and be dominated by them. And for that reason, Donald Trump is their guy. That's just something to chew on. So if you see him speaking, Trump, notice how often it comes down to strong and weak. Whenever he's berating his generals in the White House, according to Woodward's book, it's you guys are weak. You're weak. This response is weak. They'll write a speech and give it to him that's a bit conciliatory, or it's a uniting instead of a dividing kind of speech. And his comment on it will be, this is weak. It's a weak speech. It's weak. I'm showing weakness. You never show weakness. Complete lack of ability to understand how even our strong leaders must be acknowledged that they are human beings. And it's okay to be vulnerable or to show your humanity. And it's certainly important for a leader to be able to empathize. And what kind of a world do we live in? Do we really want a socially Darwinistic sort of template where the weak are dominated by the strong? So whoever happens to have the power, the control, can just squash everybody else. The humanist in us should totally revolt against such ideas. We should look at those who are downtrodden and disadvantaged, who've been given short shrift, who've had really bad luck, who've made even bad decisions and want to make better ones tomorrow. And we as humanists say, I have empathy for that person. You know, I've been in a lousy moment in my life. I want to be better for them. I want to help them. I'll get joy out of helping to elevate their status in life. The rising tide will raise all ships. What's good for them is good for humanity, is good for me, is good for everybody. That's totally missing with Donald Trump. For him, the weak are going to be dominated by the strong, and they should be. I don't know. Sensei says, why are you surprised that believers always defend rape? I don't know that I agree. I think in a biblical context, they ignore it or rationalize it, or they claim it was Satan. It's amazing the tricks people can play on themselves when trying to be moral against the immorality of their supposedly moral good book. I know a lot of people who they simply don't know it's in there. All they know about, they're Christians. They believe in Jesus, said the salvation prayer, but all they know about the Bible is John 3:16 and the Roman road and all, you know, in everything give thanks, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. That's all they know. They don't know anything about the commands in Exodus and Leviticus. They don't know anything about slavery and the beating of slaves, the executing, the stoning of children, the raping of people as punishment from on high. They're just ignorant. So ignorance is really their sin. Hi-Rai says, you gave a talk about where Christianity might come from. I read the Romans invented it for the Jewish war. I'm glad you brought that up. That is total bullshit. It became popular a few years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, that, was it Constantine who was supposed to? No. It wasn't Constantine. It was, one guy was supposed to have written the entire New Testament. And this guy had written a book, and he had about 5 seconds of notoriety. The problem is my computer's fried, and all I've got is this one laptop, and I'm terrified of losing it. I think it's called Caesar's Messiah, and they're saying I think that Josephus wrote the entire New Testament, which is such a wild and inaccurate claim. It's such crap. Don't buy it. That's not how it happened. Okay, that's total bullshit. Constantine was highly involved in the promotion of Christianity, but it was actually the emperor who came after. I've got the memory of a goldfish. I cannot remember. But it was the Constantine, and then there was the Roman Caesar who came after. And it was kind of a 1-2 punch of making Christianity the law of the land and minimizing the other gods. Ehrman's got some great writing on this. The Triumph of Christianity is a pretty good book. I had him on the podcast, and we did an interview about it. I don't find his defenses of the proof of a historical Jesus to be absolutely convincing. I think they're interesting, and he certainly knows more about the New Testament than I do, and most of the people watching or listening. But when we talk about the historicity of Jesus, whether or not the Jesus God was based on a Jesus man, and I'm doing a presentation next month called The Changing Face of Jesus, he seems to just drift back to, well, historians everywhere already have confirmed it. And that's pretty much all. And then he just brushes off the mythicists. I don't know that I'm ready to go there yet. I don't know if there was a legitimate man, Jesus, on which the legend was based. As long as we know the God-man, Jesus didn't exist, then that's enough for me. And the rest is academic. If we know that there wasn't a Jesus who walked on water and made loaves into fishes and conducted miracles with mud, healing the blind and raising people from the dead and healing the leper and dying on a cross and all those things, as long as we know there's no evidence to support any of this, the rest just becomes academic in my book. And people can get hung up on these pebbles. I think people who consider themselves to be sort of these high minds, they'll often just get lost in the weeds. Meanwhile, you got, the indoctrination of kids and people who are being targeted in the most vulnerable moments of their lives. You have all these reasons that we should be focused on the big picture, and they're just over here bickering about the small stuff. It's not that it's not important. It's just that it's just the priority, right? Well, Jesus was real. No, he wasn't. Yes, he was. No, he wasn't. Years, decades later, it's still going on. Was the God-man Jesus real? And is there any reason to support that? That's the better question to ask. And Christianity has yet to even remotely provide the answer. Let's see. Seth, please do this more often. You're very kind. Thank you. I don't know. It's weird. I've kind of rigged it. I've got the camera and then it's going over here and I've got the microphone plugged into the camera and it's feeding the laptop and it seems to be working okay. Short version of a long story is that the computer was hanging up, my main studio computer, which I use all the time. And so I'm on the phone with tech support and they're like, we need to run a diagnostic. Oh God, I've already run the diagnostics. We need to run the diagnostic again while they're watching. Okay, fine. So log in remotely and they do that and they check this and they check that and the drive and the processor and the RAM and blah, 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 and everything checks out. Okay, well, it looks like everything checks out, Seth. Yeah, it does check out. I was telling you that, but that's okay. Now you know for sure. So then we tried a reset of the computer, reinstalling the operating system from scratch. And that essentially caused a massive gremlin to crawl into the back of my computer and chew the whole thing to ribbons. Now the thing won't even boot up. I'm going through warranty discussions with them about components and whether or not they're going to replace the whole computer. So for the time being, my, you know, my whole system for doing what I do is kind of down, and I've been trying to get by with the laptop. All this right on right before I'm about to get on a plane to go to the other side of the world. So it's not like I have a whole lot of breathing room here. Swatsky said, Seth, you talked about materialism before, not to be tied to things you buy and gather. Did that realization happen after you became an atheist? I don't think it was tied to my atheism, this expression or this conviction that people who spend their time and resources on experiences are generally happier. I would have probably held to that as a believer. You know, in the faith, we were always taught not to put our trust in the world or worldly possessions. And so they would talk about that quite a bit because, frankly, most churches are not, Lakewood Church in Houston, Texas. Most pastors are not the multi-million dollar Joel Osteen. Most evangelists are not Peter Popoff, Jim Baker, Franklin Graham, etc. Most pastors are just meager, everyday people making a pretty modest living who are, they're doing what they do in a pretty modest way. They don't drive fancy cars. They don't have a lot of money to do a lot of stuff. And they are pastors because they genuinely do believe in the gospel that they are promoting. And so even they from the pulpit would have told us, you know, don't spend all your time on stuff. You know, this world will pass away. They would have encouraged us to spend it on other things, spend it on people, perhaps even invest it in God's good work. And that's not necessarily tithing to the church. It might be being charitable in some way. So I don't think it was tied to my I'm thinking about making an atheist group at my school, but I need a better argument than, but there are religious groups. This is from the casual nerd. Well, why do you want a secular group? And it doesn't, I would make it a secular group more than an atheist group. And I would go to secularstudents.org because they have kits that are made just for people who are looking to build community in their high schools and universities. And it's about secular values, it's about education, it's about community, and it doesn't really have to exist as a response to religious groups. You know, I mean, yeah, you can say that we're sort of filling a hole. There's not one of these here. And so I would like to found one and make it happen. And you can use the fact that there are religious groups there as sort of leverage if they happen to give you some pushback. Well, why does Church X, Ministry Y, get to have their group when those of us who are not affiliated with ministries or churches or religious belief, you know, we are just as entitled to be able to organize as they are? And the Secular Student Alliance has the resources you need, secularstudents.org. Swatsy said, do you identify more with being a secular humanist or something of the sort, or atheist? More and more, while I host The Thinking Atheist, and I proudly say the word atheist because I think it's healthy, atheism only speaks to what I don't believe in, the God I reject because I don't believe in gods. But as Dale McGowan once said, atheism is the first step. Humanism is the thousand steps that follow. For me, while I want to say that I'm an atheist and I realized that my rejection of superstition will inform how I see the world and how I process information and how I approach claims made. I want to be a humanist. I want to be about people, not just atheist people. I want to be about human beings. This is another problem I have with the hugely nationalistic vibe that's happening in my country right now. And those who are watching from beyond the borders of the United States are probably seeing it and pretty alarmed about this nationalism that's happening. Our country is the greatest country. We are better than the other country. It is We are superior. We are the dominant, and everybody else needs to be submissive. This is kind of how that narrative goes. And I was very nationalistic when I was a God and country Christian. And now, as much as I love the United States of America, and I want to, you know, never not appreciate the freedoms and goodness that I have in my life. I mean, this part of the world has made what I do possible. I'm not just a citizen of the U.S. I'm a citizen of the world. I'm a citizen of humanity. Now, we are all the human race. And that's humanism. That to me is, you know, somebody in the Sudan, is their life is not less valuable than mine because they live in that part of the world. Somebody who is executed, the journalist executed in Saudi Arabia, executed by Saudi Arabia's government. His life is not worth less because of where the execution happened. The people who live their lives under oppression, great oppression, in impoverished countries because they are not Americans or because they're not this denomination or because they're not this color or because they're not this gender, they are not less. Their lives are just as important. That's humanism. And that is, I don't know, that's kind of where I've been lately. I just, atheism is an important term for me. I embrace it. I think it's accurate. I do not believe in gods, period. But proactively, I want to be about people, believing that there's no help coming from on high. Let's solve each other's problems. Let's be the solution for each other. Let's build each other. Let's love each other. Let's fix the problems for each other. Let's stand with each other. Humanism. I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at. Atheist Meme says, isn't atheism the most humanitarian thing one can do to help others through right now? Well, disabusing people of bad ideas, superstitious ideas, that's, you know, atheist activism, I think, can be humanistic. But atheism itself, I don't believe in gods. I'm an atheist. You know, I mean, we can get tripped up on the semantics, but I just think, whatever you call it, secular values, let's be about human beings and let's try to see past the tribe. And if you don't think atheists have a tribe or tribes, trust me, we're human beings. We are tribal by nature. We function, consider ourselves part of this or that. And, you know, you see it in political parties. You'll see it in various cultures with different interests, different life philosophies. And, you know, the religious are not the only ones who can be tribalistic and then be very insular within those tribes. And I'm guilty. We're all guilty. We're human beings. But seeing outside the tribe, seeing other people beyond the walls of our own little fortress, our uncomfortable little cocoon, that is a great key to being able to see the walls come down between tribes. And then we see ourselves as the human race. Forgive me. Dannon says, my dad tries to discuss religion with me, but every time I tell the truth, he gets mad and says I'm trying to destroy his soul. Should I stop engaging? Should I lie and just agree? Well, there's a lot to unpack there, and there's a lot of unknowns there, Dannon. Your dad is trying to discuss religion with you. So he comes to you to talk religion, ostensibly for the purpose of converting you to religion. As I understand it, then you respond with a refutation of his religious claim, right? The sales pitch that your dad is making, you refute it and say, I don't buy it. And he says, why are you trying to take my faith away from me? Is that an accurate representation of what those conversations look like? And I'll wait for the answer, yes or no. Okay, Dannon says that's correct. Isn't it ironic that it's your father who's the one who's coming into your zip code, right? Knocking on your door saying, I want to convince you to my point of view. And when you say, sorry, I don't buy your claim. I don't think your evidence is compelling. I don't believe it. They say, why are you trying to steal my faith? Why are you trying to notice that he made his argument for religion at the end about his own soul. Why are you trying to steal my soul? Okay. Why are you destroying my soul? How can your disbelief, lack of belief, how can your rejection of God claims in any way impact his soul? That's what he has done is he has just revealed a few things. First of all, he's tremendously insecure about his own point of view. Because if your disbelief, apostasy, whatever, skepticism, questions, curiosity can affect his immortal soul, you know, and he's worried about his own soul being damned in some way, or his mind perhaps even being changed when he hears your counter argument, that tells me that he's on pretty sloppy, slippery footing. He's not convinced himself. So he needs you to affirm him. Okay. Secondly, he came to you, started the conversation, and you simply finished it. And for that, he is blaming you for being sort of a thorn under his skin. I don't think those are productive conversations. Your father's desire to believe is much greater, I think, than his desire to actually know. And he's not approaching you in good faith to understand your point of view. I would sense he's approaching you because he wants to change your mind, convince you, and bring you back into the tribe. You're the prodigal. He wants to bring the prodigal home. He wants you to agree. And I've gone through this in my own circles on many, many, many occasions. Those conversations are so unproductive because why? Because they are not really interested in changing their minds when presented with better evidence. And you aren't interested in lying to yourself or someone else to keep them comfortable. So at the end of the day, the question is, do you have the right to pursue truth on your own terms? Do you have the right to make your own exploration into the God questions on your own terms? Do you have the right to live your own life without being pawed at by other people? And I think, of course, the answer is yes, absolutely yes. And do you lie to keep your dad from experiencing cognitive dissonance? I don't think so at all. Doesn't mean you have to engage in the conversation. I don't think you necessarily have to respond. You don't have to have those back and forth conversations that just suck your will to live because you know they're never going to go anywhere and they always result in shouts and tears and slammed doors and really, really tense environments. You don't have to subject yourself to that, especially if you know minds aren't going to be changed. Your journey is not about your dad. Your journey is not about your dad. Your journey is about you. It's about you living your life on your terms. So I don't care what you tell your father, but I think you need to be honest with yourself. My advice would be, you know, not to lie to him, but certainly don't lie to yourself. And to understand that life's too short to live as an echo of somebody else's voice out there. I would like to see you come to a point where even if you disagree, you can kind of skip over the conversation and enjoy the other things that you have. That's kind of a pipe dream. Something I've attempted in my own life and have had no real success with, but it's what I would hope would happen in your circle. Forgive the long answer. A few more and we'll call it a day. Genetically modified skeptic. What a great name. Says, what do you think of the claim that atheists are just another type of fundamentalist? Well, I think it depends on why you are an atheist. You know, are there dogmatic atheists? Yeah. Are there ignorant atheists? Are there people who are atheists for bad reasons? Are there horrible human beings who are atheists? I mean, they're human beings. Atheists like anybody. I mean, you'll find the best and worst in any culture. And so I think you'll find some who are, I think many of them are, they can be fundamentalist in how they approach those who don't hold their atheist position. They completely, in many ways, will lack perspective of what it's like to be a religious person, or they lack the empathy of the human beings who practice religion, who will say all Christians are mentally insane. All Christians are stupid. All Christians are a hate group. All Christians are this or that. Well, that's a type of, I think, fundamentalism. You know, atheists are not immune from bad ideas. The lack of a belief in God doesn't really tell you how they got there. Doesn't tell you if they're a rational, reasonable person or if their atheism is based on reason. It doesn't tell you whether or not they're a wonderful or terrible human being. Atheists run the gamut. Jessica said, hey, you're going to be in Orlando, planning to see you next month. I'd love to bring my 15-year-old daughter. Are there some teenagers? You betcha. She's going to have a blast. One thing I try to do when I do a presentation, because, you know, we've all seen conventions where they bring in these very, 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 very smart people, and their presentations are really clinical. They make a few key mistakes. One is that they read the presentation to the audience. They don't really communicate eye to eye. They just sit down with their heads locked onto their laptops. And two, when they put up these big slides, it looks like a college textbook, and then they tend to read everything that's on the screen, and it's just so sterile. I want to take people on a ride. I want people to take the journey. And so that is, that's what's going to happen. There's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be some surprises, but she's going to have a really good time. And I hope you do bring her. I hope I get the chance to meet both of you, all of you, bring the whole family. But yeah, I mean, it's not like an exclusive thing. I wouldn't bring very young children, because they're going to be like, you know, hey, get me out of here. I'm going to go play with stuff. But you know, a young teenager, 13, 14, 15, absolutely. I think it's a great idea. I'd love a chance to do that. I'm going to be in Fort Myers in Clearwater and Orlando, sethandrews.net. And there's a speaking tab. If you want to click that, you can see all the dates as I get them. And I will see you guys in the Netherlands here in about a week and a half. Week and a half, a little over a week and a half. Very, very excited about that. Thanks for watching the live stream, my friends. And thanks for being a part of the community, for being such a positive part of my life, for making such a difference for me, reminding me that I'm not alone and I'm not crazy in my rejection of superstition, even though I'm surrounded by religious people, religious events. I got churches all around, churches all around me. You help to keep me sane, and it matters. So you keep me sane, I keep you sane. We got each other's backs out there, and we'll hopefully get a chance to be an even greater part of seeing these bad ideas defeated and the promotion of humanity, human beings, humanism in this crazy world. I'll see you next time.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.